Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. Has Wall Street found a bottom? Maybe. When markets open in 2 hours, there may be a positive open. At least that's what the futures say. But we're asking you to tell your stories of what's going on your street. We know what's going on Wall Street. What's your snapshot or reaction to the financial crisis around the world? And I don't know about you. If you follow the news, if you're like me and you drift off to sleep, you know, I keep having the same dream, and it sounds like this.
Lehman Brothers.
Fannie Mae, AIG.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
And AIG. Fannie and Freddie. Lehman.
Fannie and Freddie.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
AIG.
Merrill Lynch.
AIG and the Merrill Lynch.
Merrill Lynch.
Lehman Brothers.
Then Lehman Brothers.
Am I okay?
I think you're okay.
Anyway, after an unprecedented series of bailouts and bankruptcies that go with all those names you heard, mostly from CNBC, we've been wondering, is there a way for a bailout to stop the momentum of this slide? And how do you design a bailout to actually do that? To unpack and analyze what that's all about is our friend David Leonhardt, financial writer for The New York Times, joining us from Washington. David, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
How are your dreams? Are they...
They're okay.
They're good. That's good.
Yeah, they're okay. If the Red Sox could start winning again, that would be better.
See, that's
go
a good,
Red Sox.
You need
yeah.
a distraction. So the idea of a bailout and this whole principle of moral hazard and too big to fail, that whole thing, the idea is to try to design a program that's going to stop the momentum of some kind of a financial slide. And I'm wondering if you see, first of all, the chance that that could actually happen. And, you know, is that indeed what these bailouts are designed to do? Stop a bigger slide?
They are designed to do it, but I think there's sort of a subtle difference here that's important to keep in mind. These bailouts are fundamentally defensive, and so I think the odds that any one bailout is going to turn the psychology of Wall Street is pretty slim. I don't think we're going to see a bailout of AIG, for example, work, and then everyone on Wall Street is going to say, oh, this problem is over. Instead, I think the reason the government does this, and a lot of the people in government doing this hate the idea of doing it, right? I mean, a lot of these people are Republicans who really don't think the government should have too active a role in government. And now
a little late for that right now,
well,
isn't
it? Well, it is, and that's why they're doing it. That's why they're doing it, to their credit, because they understand that even if in a perfect world the government wouldn't be owning a large chunk of AIG, the alternative looks far worse at this point. But I think that's the way to think about this. It's not that they hope by doing it they can end the crisis. It's that they fear that by not doing it, the crisis would get a lot worse. And another way of saying that is that the solution isn't likely to come from a bailout. It's likely to come from some combination of time, falling asset values, and more fundamental policy changes.
Well, let's talk about that in a moment. But there is precedent for the federal government owning something. I mean, Amtrak is left over from the bailout of Penn Central, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's not clear to me that there's quite precedent for it owning something like AIG.
Right.
I mean, if you think about Amtrak, transportation in much of the world is owned by the government. It's just not clear that it exactly works in the private sector. Now, it's not clear that Amtrak works either, but that's a different story.
Well, let's look at what the central banks did around the world today. More than $2 billion injected into the financial system. I mean, by my count, and, you know, I'm not an expert on this, the Fed has something on the order of $800 billion at its disposal, and, you know, $180 billion was ponied up by the U.S. banks today. I mean, are we, you know, $800 billion and counting down now?
Well, I mean, there's no question that the Fed has started to use some significant portion of its resources. And you know, on the one hand, you could start to worry it can't do this forever. Now, Ben Bernanke won at one point the joking nickname of Helicopter Ben, because back when we were worried about deflation in the early part of this decade, he reminded people, look, if the government needs to, it can print money. And he raised the specter of dropping money out of a helicopter, which was not a serious notion. But the point is that the government does have a huge number of resources at its disposal, and it's not clear to me that we're yet at the point in which the Fed is on the verge of running out of bullets. On the other hand, the consequences for it, there are consequences for it using up its resources, and this is likely to worsen the deficit, and this is serious stuff.
But back to your point about can this go on forever, one of our listeners was asking exactly that. They're writing checks for an Iraq and Afghanistan war. They're writing these billion-dollar checks for to help these companies on Wall Street. At what point is there no money in the piggy bank?
Well, I think the short answer to that is taxes are going to have to come up. I mean, if you look at the deficit that we're now running, it is nowhere near as large as the deficit as we had in the early 90s and the late 80s. But the way we got rid of that deficit was that George H.W. Bush raised taxes and Bill Clinton raised taxes. And when you combine three things, the current deficit we now have, the fact that these moves, while they're complicated and there's not a direct relationship between them and the deficit, these moves are going to increase the deficit. And the massive increase we're going to have in Medicare spending because of the retirement of the baby boomers and the increase in health care costs. There's just no way, it seems to me, that we don't get our deficit down without raising taxes. The other way to do it would be to have enormous cuts in spending. But there is currently no politician who is willing to propose a list of spending cuts that would come anywhere close to doing this. And the reason is a lot of government spending is popular.
Well, you're calculating the deficit based on a percentage of GDP, right? Not in a dollar amount compared to what was going on in the 90s, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I just want to make that point clear. But to your other point of dropping money out of helicopters, I suspect the presidential candidates might actually pick up on that Bernanke idea. And we may be hearing that in the speeches. David Leonhardt, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
David Leonhardt, of course, financial writer for the New York Times and our friend. And we have in the studio our friend Femi. Okay, with the headlines, give us some good news. Femi!
Ooh, shall I start at the bottom and work up then? The only way you're going to get good news first. Sorry about that.